Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio today on this Medical Monday is Dr. Frank Lombardo. He's a board-certified orthopedist and practices at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and Northern Dutchess Hospital in Poughkeepsie. Dr. Lombardo is with Orthopedic Associates of Dutchess County. He earned his medical degree at SUNY Stony Brook and did his internship and residency in orthopedic surgery and general surgery at North Shore Long Island Jewish Medical Center. He also did a fellowship in orthopedic reconstruction at the Anderson Orthopedic Research Institute in Alexandria, Virginia. He specializes in gender-specific hip and knee replacements, minimally invasive surgery, and partial knee replacement. Dr. Lombardo, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for inviting me here today.
Well, we're delighted to have you. And everybody, to be part of the conversation, the phones are already beginning to ring. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So I understand you have a robot in your office.
We do. We have a robot at the hospital at Vassar Brothers Medical Center. We did buy the Makoplasty robot, which allows us to perform hip and knee replacement surgery.
And what exactly is Mako except a shark?
So the Makoplasty system allows us to perform the surgery more safely and accurately than we had ever been able to do before. What we're able to do is we're able to reconstruct a three-dimensional image from a CAT scan that's obtained of the person's leg or knee, reconstruct that image in the computer, and it allows me to plan for the patient's surgery prior to them even entering the operating room. I'm able to size their bones, size the components, and then determine how I'm going to place those components during the surgery.
When you say components, what do you mean?
The hip and knee replacement parts we call components.
Uh-huh.
So they are resurfacing parts that we place on the bone during the surgery itself.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, I know that with hips we have all of this debate about what they should be made of. Do we have that in knees also?
We do not. The debate does not really exist on the knee side as much because the components or parts are very standardized and have been used for years and years and years. They have been re-engineered to wear less, but they have the materials have not been changed, unlike the hip side, where the materials have changed dramatically, and we've had to go back to using some of the old materials because we found that the newer materials were not working very well.
So when we do this, what is the reason that most people have bad knees?
It's a very commonly asked question that I get during the day, and I tell people there are probably three reasons why. Some which they can change, some which they cannot. It is wear and tear. What we do every day wears out our knees, just like it would wear out any other part in our car or in our tools. It is injuries. Things that have happened in the past to injure our knees can cause damage that has later effects. And what we're given, our heredity. Mom and dad definitely play a part in, you know, hip and knee arthritis.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, listen, if it's okay with you, doctor, what we're going to do now is start some calls. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to our friend John in Kingston. John, you're on.
Hello, Alan, Dr. Chartok, and Dr. Lombardo. This is a former patient of yours, and you did my knees in 2010, in May and November. And I've never been happier with anything that's happened in my life. You gave me back my life.
Oh, thanks for calling, John. That's great. I'm so glad that this has made you so much better.
It has. It has given me a whole. I wasn't able to walk for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And now I can go for miles.
And how long did it take you to recover, John, from the operation?
Well, I worked hard at it, and the pain was extreme at certain points. But I think the recovery, as Dr. Lombardo pointed out to me, it's 50% him, 50% me. So I had to get down and start doing the strengthening and the range of motion, which would allow me to reach a state of full recovery.
Well, John, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir.
And let's go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Okay, Jim, you're on.
What long-term effects might the tibial plateau leveling operation have on the muscles, tendons, and possibly the hip joint?
Okay, before you answer, you have to decipher for us, because we don't know all of those terms, doctor. Mm-hmm.
So have you had an operation before? Is that what you mean?
No, it's just a general question.
Okay, so the question that he's asking is that the knee joint is made up of two bones, the femur bone and the tibia bone. The tibia bone is the lower portion of the knee. And he's asking, what would reconstruction of the lower portion of the knee have on, I guess, your gait pattern as well as your hips, right? Is that your
right.
question? And, you know, I would say it would have a significant improvement if you have deformity or that the leg is no longer pointed correctly. Reconstructing that tibia and allowing the knee to be more straight and balanced will likely take some pressure off your back and your hip, so it would likely improve things.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim. Okay, and let's go to Bo in Sudbury, Massachusetts. Bo, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. 3 years ago, I had partial knee replacements by Wolfgang Fitz in Boston and new ACLs at the same time. I'm an active sports person. I'm a ski patroller in the wintertime, and I do a lot of exercise, a lot of biking. What's the best thing I can do to prolong my artificial knees?
Well, what I think most surgeons would say is low impact activities or closed chain activities. And we'll talk a little bit about both. Low impact activities are anything that doesn't require a constant pounding on your knees, like running, jogging, rock climbing. Those things put a lot of stress and strain on the knee replacement components, as well as the cartilage that you still do have remaining in your knee.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of that is closed chain activities. Closed chain activities mean that your feet are planted and your body is moving. So exercises that would be representative of that are the exercise bicycle, the elliptical machine, even squats to some extent are a closed chain exercise. Open chain activities are activities where your body is planted and your legs are moving. So the leg extension machine, the leg curl machine, those are machines that do put a lot more shear stress across your knee and could damage the cartilage and the components that you have in place.
Very interesting. Thank you very much. I appreciate taking the time.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Bye.
One thing I didn't hear you say, let me get this straight. Bicycles, indoor bicycling, is good or bad?
Great.
Good. Good. Then I went on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about walking? Power walking.
I think that walking is a reasonable activity to continue doing if you want to preserve the cartilage or even your knee replacement components. I think where it starts to become problematic is when you start to incorporate a lot of hills, valleys, uneven surfaces, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of shifting of your knee while performing the activity.
Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I do a lot of gardening. I do like to do swimming.
Does gardening count for exercise?
Doesn't really. Mm-hmm. Probably not, but the swimming does.
And when you put that shovel into the ground and shove it down with your knee, that doesn't do good.
That's not good at all. No.
We
have to do it sometimes.
But we
though.
Do it, don't
we? We do it because we love doing things.
Until you hit the root from the old tree that used to be there, and then you got a problem.
And then you've got some trouble.
Yeah. Know? So, swimming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like to swim in the pool. I spend a lot of time in swimming. It's a low-impact activity. It's almost no gravity, does not put a lot of stress on your joints.
But do you get the same physical benefit from swimming that you do from some of the other stuff?
I do think so, yes. Yeah, you can get your cardiovascular system going. You get all of your muscles moving. You've got that frictional force on your cartilage that does generate some
I was going to ask you a question, doctor.
Mm-hmm.
This has to do with our guy, Bob Berman, who is our astronomer, mm-hmm. Who's on regularly here. And he mentioned something about the CAT scan and said something like, somebody reported this to me, you get as much radiation from a CAT scan as you do if you were a mile away from the center of where the A-bomb hit in Hiroshima. Is that true?
Well, I am not a physicist, and I do not think that is true, but I cannot give you the number of millirads that you'd get from a CAT scan versus...
Is it dangerous?
No, it is not. The amount of radiation that you get from a single CAT scan is very low, and there is no direct link to radiation from a CAT scan machine and cancer.
Our guest is Dr. Frank Lombardo, board-certified orthopedist. It's your chance. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want every one of those phones ringing. 1-800-348-2551. Let me give it to you again. Don't be chicken. It may help you. It may save your life. 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. Bel Air Music Festival, High Mount, New York. The Bel Air Jazz Club presents the Django Reinhardt Festival All-Stars, Friday, August 1st. BELLEAYREMusic.org for tickets. St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose STMarys.com. Capital Wine at State and Lark in the heart of Albany, offering local and international wines, tastings Friday 6 to 9, CapitalWineStore.com. And CSEA, beginning a second century of service to all New Yorkers, people working together to help make a better New York.
It's unbelievable. You know, I don't even know my own power. I said I wanted all five phones ringing, and I got all five phones ringing. That's terrific. Thank you all for that. Appreciate it a lot. Our wonderful Colleen O'Connell is taking stuff down as fast as she can, and just keep calling. Don't worry about, it's going to take a little while to get them all. Okay, let's go to Michael in Otsego County. Michael, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Michael. You're on.
Hi. I had a question for you. I lost my left leg above the knee 50 years ago, and I'm pretty active, and I was wondering if you can do knee replacements on, you know, my remaining leg. I had half the cartilage taken out about 30 years ago, and it's on bone on bone. But I was wondering if, you know, you can do one of those knee replacements with just one leg.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a reconstructive option for you, and it's probably it's very important for you to have that one leg that you depend on so heavily be less painful. So that's definitely an option for you, of course.
Oh, okay.
And it does not make the surgery any more difficult.
Hey, and Michael, am I allowed to ask you this, Alan? Am I allowed to ask you how you lost the other leg?
I had bone cancer when I was 11.
Wow. It's amazing. Well, Michael, thank you for the very good call. I'm sure others will profit by it. Appreciate it.
But I had another question.
Sure.
Does that, when they do that, do they change the angle of the leg? Because like, it's, you know, it is affecting my hip now, too.
Do you have a prosthesis that you work with?
Any longer. I had, I always did have, up till about a year or two ago, but I had some skin grafting done on it where there was a problem from, heat blisters and what have you, and that kind of made it worse.
Right.
So now, a year now, I haven't been able to wear it.
Okay. So no, the angulation or the anatomic reconstruction of the knee would be the same as a standard knee. So it would not change.
So that's not going to alleviate.
Yeah. The ligaments of your knee have to be balanced, meaning that those ligaments that you currently have in place need to be appropriately tensioned. So you really could not change the angle of the leg at all without balancing those ligaments during the surgery itself.
Uh-huh. Okay,
and what do the ligaments do, doctor?
So there are several ligaments in your knee, four very important ones. The medial collateral ligament, the lateral collateral ligament, those are the two ligaments on the in and outside of your knee. We'll call them the right and left side of your knee. Those ligaments allow the knee to ride straight up and back without going from side to side. There are two central ligaments in your knee, the ACL and the PCL. Those are the anterior cruciate ligament and the posterior cruciate ligament. Those two ligaments allow the knee to stay localized underneath the femur bone.
So is that what would be causing a problem, that it's, you know, like I center my leg, you know, when I walk and stand? My muscles are getting extremely tight, and painful.
Those ligaments are usually not the problem. The problem usually arises from the fact that you've worn away some of the cartilage in your knee.
Yep.
And because you've worn away some of that cartilage and bone, the angulation of the leg has started to change.
Right.
Therefore, you've put some laxity, or you've not, you don't have enough tightness on one side, and the other side is too tight.
Right. Yeah. The inside, actually, the cartilage was removed from.
Right, and that's the most common area to have cartilage damage. The inside portion of the knee, or what we call the medial side of the knee, takes up about 70% of the body's weight. In you, it may take up even more because you're not using your other leg at all.
Right.
So you're putting even more stress on that, what we call compartment of the knee.
So Michael, we're going to let you go because we got a lot of people on the phone. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay, so now we'll go to Rick in Albany. Rick in Albany, that opens up one phone, 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Rick.
Doctor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rick.
So I've had a consultation with an orthopedist. My background is ACL replacements in both knees when I was younger, probably 20 to 30 years ago, and now significant arthritis development in both knees, limiting my flexibility and limiting my my mobility.
Sure.
So I've been doing some physical therapy. That's helped significantly.
Mm-hmm.
But the orthopedist did say at some point you're probably going to be a candidate for a total knee, actually for total knees.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, if and when that time comes, could you speak to bilateral replacement versus two individual procedures?
Sure. So there's a bunch of different parts to that question. So one of the issues would be that do you really need a total knee replacement or could you benefit from a partial knee replacement? And my answer would be different for both of those questions. A partial knee replacement, I think, is reasonable to do both knees at the same time. The surgery time is very short. The recovery time is very quick, and there is not a lot of blood loss during the procedure. Therefore, I would recommend both partial knees at the same time. Two total knees at the same time is a little bit different. It definitely has greater risks associated with it because there are two larger operations that carry with it greater risks. Those risks would be blood loss, infection, longer surgical time, and longer recovery time as well. The likelihood of having a complication after having two total knee replacements done at the same time is about four times as high as if you had one knee replacement done, waited several weeks, several months, and then had the other knee replacement done.
Wow.
So, it's something to consider. A younger person definitely could sustain that risk, but an older person with a number of medical problems, I would not suggest that.
But if you do both at the same time,
right?
Then what are you wheelchair bound?
We get everyone up walking right away.
Really?
Yep, and they would be. It's just a little bit more difficult, and the recovery does take a little bit longer.
Rick,
a quick clarification. When you said partial versus complete. Or total, partial versus total?
Right.
Just a one sentence, what's the difference?
So there are three compartments in your knee. There are three different parts of your knee. Think about them like three rooms in your house. A total knee replacement replaces all three of those compartments or all three rooms. A partial knee replacement replaces only one of those compartments or one of those rooms. So it's a smaller operation, resurfacing less bone. Usually, like we were talking before, the damage is to that inner compartment or medial compartment of the knee.
Right.
Now, when you resurface, exactly what do you do?
So it's very much like it sounds. You know, I think people identify with the dentist fairly well, and when they have a cap on their tooth, the dentist doesn't take the tooth out. He grinds the tooth down or reshapes the tooth to take a cap. When a knee replacement is performed, it's performed in a very similar way. I resurface the bone. I shave a small area of the bone down. About 10 millimeters of bone is removed on the femur and the tibia, and that is resurfaced with metal and polyethylene components.
Yeah. And those are all kosher now? We haven't had any bad problems.
They're all kosher now, no bad problems.
Okay. Hey, Rick, thanks. We've got a lot of people behind you. Appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Sue in Belchertown. Okay, Sue, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. 2 years ago, when I was 59, I had a ski accident and tore my ACL.
Mm-hmm.
It was not repaired because they said I had a small amount of arthritis in my knee.
Sure.
I bicycle without a brace, and I hike and I ski with a brace.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm wondering, but they told me I would likely need a knee replacement down the road. How much more likely does a torn ACL that's not been repaired make that?
Let's go over some territory here, Doctor. An ACL, one more time, is?
It's the anterior cruciate ligament. It is the central ligament in your knee. It is involved most with pivoting and twisting.
Okay.
So when we're running in a direction and then change direction, that ligament allows our knee to have the stability it needs to not feel unstable.
Okay, now on to the question.
Okay. So the likelihood of you needing a knee replacement later on or having some amount of arthritis versus somebody without a torn ACL is higher. I don't think there is an absolute number for that likelihood, but it is much higher because you do... Usually when someone tears an ACL, they've also damaged the cartilage in some other part of their knee as well. So it's not necessarily the ACL tear, but it's the fact that they've likely done enough damage that they've damaged some other part of their knee too.
Okay. And can I ask one other thing? So if I do end up with a knee replacement, will that correct the ACL also?
So a typical total knee replacement does not require an ACL to be present. It's actually typically removed during the procedure. So yes, it will address the issue of a deficient ACL or not having that ACL that you currently have.
Okay. And bicycling and hiking and skiing with a brace, aren't going to make it worse? More likely that I'll need the knee sooner? Or
not typically, no.
Not typically?
No. Not unless you were injured during one of those events.
Well, I do fall, but I've got a brace, and it doesn't seem to bother it at all.
Sure. Yeah, pain is definitely is a huge indicator for things that you probably shouldn't be doing.
Okay. Thanks, Sue.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. On to Jody in Vernon. Okay, Jody, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Great show, Alan. I'll be right to the point. I wanted to know, I've heard some pros and cons about the knees and hip surgery, about a prolotherapy or stem cell as not as invasive as the full, knee or hip. Mm. What do you think about that?
It's a very
that?
Good question. I think that really the jury's still out. It's a very new technology. It's only been out a few years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have enough information to really say that this is an avenue that should be undertaken.
Okay, I'll bite. What is it?
Stem cell.
I know, but what is it? I mean, you say stem cell. You're injecting people with their stem cells?
So you're injecting people typically with plasma or stem cells that they've obtained from some other source. And there is not enough data, I think, to
say. Like what other source? Think?
So there is one company that obtains stem cells from non-viable pregnancies. So there are controversial sources.
I got it.
Yeah.
Well, that's all changing now, too.
It is. It is.
Places
yeah.
to get it. Jody, you have a follow-up on this?
Did I follow up on
no,
it?
No. Do you have a follow-up question?
I wanted to know also on prolotherapy, because I have factor V. In factor V, if I had both knees or both hips done, I'm on a high risk for bleeding.
You are a higher risk for bleeding, but there are...
Wait. Okay. Factor V. I always want to give definition to everybody else who's listening out there so we know what we're talking about. Go ahead. What is factor V?
Factor V is one of the proteins that our body makes that allows us to clot. Uh-huh. It's what we call a clotting cascade, and that cascade involves a number of different proteins our body makes to help us clot. Now, when someone has a factor V deficiency, they are missing one of those factors or one of those proteins. So their clotting cascade doesn't work as well.
And when do we find this out? When you do your initial intake at the hospital?
Usually, that would not be the place I'd like to find that. I'd like to find out in my office when we've decided to do that surgery. So we'd review their medical history at the time of booking their surgery in the office.
Have you ever booked a surgery and then found out afterwards that somebody had factor V?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't intend to either.
Okay.
So that factor can be given back to you. There is a way of providing factor V to a patient that is deficient prior to the surgery. So,
Joe,
I don't...
are you still there?
Yes, I am.
So, for you, I would definitely not suggest doing both surgeries at the same time.
Okay.
One knee replacement would be the preferable means because you have an elevated risk of bleeding to begin with.
And you feel the same way about prolotherapy as you do stem cell. That
yeah,
it's not,
probably
okay.
even less so. You know,
okay.
I don't know if there's really much evidence at all.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Okay. Now you, we have a lot of phones ringing, but you have robots, right? In your,
we do.
And now does that minimize the bleeding and the infection rate?
You know, for the partial knee replacement, it really does minimize the bleeding and allows me to perform the surgery through a much smaller incision than I had been able to previously.
Sure.
It also allows me to perform that surgery much more accurately. I have a lot more information at my fingertips now than I had just a year ago to make better decisions. The computer and the robot is not making those decisions for me. It's just providing me with that information so I can make better decisions.
How long is it before they begin to, the computer and the robot begin to make that decision for you or to give you options anyway?
I really hope that we're decades away from that.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Gail in Adams. Okay, Gail, go.
Hi, thanks for my call, taking my call.
Sure.
I have an unusual situation here. I've got both knees, both hips, both shoulders replaced. About 2 years ago, I got a massive infection in my body, and it had to have my left knee replacement removed, a spacer put in, and then ultimately put. I got a knee back. Now my right shoulder, about a month ago, an abscess formed under my right shoulder, and it's leaking a fluid and has been leaking a fluid ever since. On Wednesday, I found out that my right shoulder replacement has to come out. It is infected, and it's loose. So my question is, what is that fluid? It doesn't have any cells. It can't be gram stained,
mm-hmm.
and it's not infection. What is the fluid that's leaking out of that that hole in my arm?
Well, it has to be somewhat synovial fluid, and if you have a draining sinus, which is what that's called, if you have fluid leaking out of your shoulder, by definition, that is an infection, whether you can culture any bacteria out of it or not.
Okay.
It is by definition an infection in your shoulder, and it is used as one of the hallmark criteria for identifying and being able to tell a patient confidently that they have an infection. Sometimes the bacteria is very difficult to culture from the shoulder. The shoulder grows a very special bacteria. It's called Propionibacterium acne. It is very difficult to culture, and oftentimes the lab doesn't know how to culture that fluid. They have to grow it on a very special plate, and they have to be advised to do so because they don't often do that. So that's one thing that you might want to have a discussion with your laboratory person about, or your doctor, that they're checking for that specific bacteria.
And I want
name
to
that bacteria again.
Propionibacterium acne.
Propionum?
Yeah, don't ask me how to spell that. That's a tough one.
Bacterium acne. Okay. Okay, and the other thing I wanted to mention was when I had both of my knees, total knee replacements done, I had them both done at the same time.
Sure.
And I have to say, I was only in the hospital 5 days, and I was only in rehab for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you ambulate more correctly when you only have when you have both knees done as opposed to one knee. When people have one knee done, they have a tendency to favor that knee when they're walking, and it can cause other problems in your hip and spine.
Yes, certainly.
So
yeah, that's definitely
really good,
true.
I had a really good, quick recovery. It was done at Brigham and Women's.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really good quick recovery, and it's been fine until.
Yeah, by no means is having both knee replacements at the same time completely not advised, but it is more risky. My patients that have one knee replacement done at a time are out of the hospital in 1 or 2 days, go home with no rehab, and they go to outpatient physical therapy.
Okay, Gail, we're going to let you go because
okay.
a lot of people are behind you.
Thanks
a lot. I asked for every phone to ring, and every phone is ringing. Let's go to Janet in Liberty. Okay, Janet, you're on.
Hello?
Hello,
Dr.
Janet.
Dr. Lombardo?
Hi,
yes,
Janet.
Yes, hello. I'm hoping you can answer my question. Hopefully you can help me. I injured my knee about 5.5 years ago, and since that time, I gained 45 pounds. And the problem I'm dealing with now is I have a lot of arthritis in my spine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what I can do on my own. Currently, I use hot water bottles I take aspirin every day. I need to lose 45 pounds, and I'm also using glucosamine chondroitin.
Sure.
I'm a little bit better, actually, after 4 weeks of the glucosamine.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to know is what how much will losing weight, because, you know, I have self-discipline. I could lose the weight. Mm-hmm. I just need a sense of hope. Mm-hmm. Now, how much would losing the weight help with the arthritis? I also use a stationary bicycle. That seems to help, you know.
So it's a twofold question you have there. What type of things could you do to lose the weight? I think you've started with some of them. The exercise bicycle is great. The elliptical is a fantastic machine to work with, and getting in the water is fantastic as well for trying to lose weight. You know, I can tell you by the effect of losing weight on your knees. For each pound that you lose, it's about 7 pounds of weight you take off of each step you take on your knees. So that's pretty profound. You lose 10 pounds, that's 70 pounds you take off of your knee with each step that you take. The average person takes about 2,000 steps a day. If you do the math there, those are big, big numbers.
Doctor and Janet, neither of you mentioned the idea of dieting. Mm-hmm. You mentioned exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of exercise, but I find it's only the dieting that really helps.
Yeah, it's a combination of both. It's calories in, calories burned, you know. So it really is both.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much effect would that have on alleviating the pain in my spine?
Well, I think you got an answer, Janet, that, you know, there's tremendous amount of pressure put on there. It can't hurt, right?
Certainly not, no.
Janet, I got to let you go. A lot of people behind you. Thanks so much for calling.
Appreciate it.
Okay, let's go to Joyce in Boston. Okay, nope. Joyce, Joyce, stay right there. We have to take a little breaklet, 7 seconds or so. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Nathan Latour Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, over 15 acres featuring windswept objects and sculpture inspired by wind. Garden and gift shop open daily from 9 to 5, BerkshireBotanical.org. Field Goods, delivering fresh produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites in the Capital District and in the Mid and Lower Hudson Valley, field-goods.com. Bra and Girl, new location, 306 Main Street, Great Barrington, a bra and lingerie boutique featuring personal fittings and styles from Wacol and Chantel and Notori in sizes 30A to 42H, open 7 days, braandgirl.com. And Phoenicia International Festival of the Voice, 5 days of celebrating Spain with music from opera to baroque to flamenco, featuring Rossini's The Barber of Seville, July 30th to August 3rd. PhoeniciaVoiceFest.com.
And we're back. Joyce, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, ask your question.
Oh, thank you so much. A friend and I are both scheduled for knee replacement surgery. I'm 64. He is 80. We're both in excellent health. What type of anesthesia do you advise? We've both read a lot about post-operative cognitive decline. There's general anesthesia. There's regional, which I understand is spinal. What's your advice?
I think there's different advice for different patients with different medical problems. If you're of advanced age and you have multiple medical problems, the spinal anesthesia is much safer for a patient. It also provides less cognitive issues after surgery. The general anesthesia has advantages as well. The general anesthesia provides the advantage of very fast mobilization after surgery, meaning that we can have patients walking the same day as surgery with general anesthesia, where spinal anesthesia, it takes a while for that medication to wear off and for you to be able to start walking again quickly. You know, it's only another day, but that first day seems like an eternity for some people, and they really want to get walking and get moving. So for some of the younger patients without medical problems, we'll use the general anesthesia. And for some of the older patients or patients with multiple medical problems, we'll use the spinal anesthesia or the regional anesthesia.
And so what I've read about, again, the possibility of post-operative cognitive decline. Is that something that is realistic, a realistic concern with general?
It is, but it's usually short term. It doesn't last for a long period of time. It could last, you know, several days or even several weeks, but most of it resolves.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joyce.
Thank you.
That opens up a line. We'll go to Caroline in Sharon, Connecticut. You go, Caroline.
Hello. I have some tightness and stiffness in my knees, and walking distances isn't as much fun as it used to be. I do have an exercise bike I like, but I'm under the impression that the best thing I could do is perhaps exercises to strengthen my quadriceps in my upper legs to take the pressure off the knee. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if the doctor feels that's true and which exercises he would most recommend.
Mm-hmm. So I think that gets back to an earlier question. I think the exercise bicycle is a very good activity for you to perform. What I often suggest to people is to adjust the level of the seat. Often that's not something they do very often. And what that allows is it allows the different extremes of motions to be obtained. If you raise the seat, you work on extension of your knee more. If you lower the seat, you work on that flexion of your knee or bending of your knee. And that will resolve some of the issues of stiffness that you may have. Also, if there's a tensioning device on there, you can put a little bit more tension on the wheel, and that will allow you to pedal a little bit harder and build up some of that quadriceps muscle strength.
Using weights on your ankles?
So weights on your ankles is okay. It isn't what we called an open chain activity, where it does put some stress on your knees. But if you do it in a very controlled way and low weights, I think that is appropriate. Or it's fine.
Now, I have a Schwinn Aerodyne. Mm-hmm. My question is, they don't make them anymore, mm-hmm. But it's upper and lower. Use your arms as well as use your feet. Is that indicated or contraindicated for knees?
I don't think it has any real impact on knees at all. You know, it does everything that a normal bicycle would do, but it's not going to affect it in a bad way. You have the ones that move your arms with? Is that what you're saying?
Arms and feet.
Arms and feet. Yeah, yeah, I think that's fine. I don't think it has any contraindication at all.
Okay. Caroline, you got anything else?
Well, I have a very basic bike. You can't do much to adjust it. And mm-hmm. I just have this feeling that probably the muscles in my legs are not as strong as they should be, and that I should concentrate on that. But therapy that I've had did suggest primarily, but there were some exercises that didn't involve weights, but they really seem to think weights would make a lot of difference.
Right. And even squats, standing by a counter, can help a lot as well.
Right.
You know, they probably taught you, they probably went over that with you at therapy too, right?
Right. Just got to discipline myself, right?
Yeah, that's the toughest part.
Like the rest of us. Caroline, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Nick in Beckett, where everybody dances. Okay, Nick, you're on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I'm 34 years old. I had a very slight meniscal tear that never quite healed. And then 3 years ago, I had a repair surgery, a medial meniscal bucket handle tear.
Mm-hmm.
It's now 2.5-3 years later, and it hasn't healed properly.
Mm-hmm.
So I was locking, you know, the leg was actually locking when you bent too deeply. That stopped, but it slips quite a bit. So I just went to see an orthopedist, the same fellow that performed the first surgery. And I guess I have a few questions. One is it possible that this sort of thing can grow back together, that it can just, that each side of the tear can just find itself and repair itself? The second question would be, if they were to try another repair surgery rather than a meniscectomy, whether that has any chance of taking. My orthopedist seems to think, no, I'm too old for that, and it may be sort of shredded at this point.
Okay, so
the consequences of removing it altogether and alternatives to that.
So the first part of your question revolved around whether it would repair on its own or not, right? Typically, meniscal tears are tears that don't repair. And the reason for that is that the meniscus, for the most part, does not have a very good blood supply. Yeah. And for a tear to have repaired itself or to have been repaired, it would have had to have been in an area of the meniscus that we call the red zone, where there is a lot of blood in that area. And that will heal. But most meniscal tears are not in that area. So a tear that's repaired in a red-white zone or a white-white zone would not likely repair.
And a meniscus, doctor, is?
The meniscus is the bumper cushion that exists between the femur and the tibia bone. It allows cushioning of those two bones while we're moving our knee.
And many people have been trying for years to do an artificial meniscus, but they haven't done it yet, right?
Not yet. Yeah. That kind of goes into the second part of your question. What are the alternatives? You're a fairly young guy, and if you're active, the other alternative is a meniscal transplant, which is not a surgery that's performed very often, but it can be repaired. Now we don't have an artificial meniscus, but there are meniscuses that we obtain from cadavers that can be used for transplantation. It's not a very common surgery, but it can be performed, and it would be an alternative that would be considered in a young, active person without arthritis.
Have you done them?
I do not.
Mm-hmm. Without arthritis, you said?
Without arthritis, yeah.
So this is the other issue, is that when I went in for the repair 3 years ago when I was 31, I didn't have any arthritis, apparently, and now he says, the latest x-ray says that I do. And basically, I've been inflamed for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know how far advanced it is, but he seemed to think, oh, I'm headed for a knee replacement.
Well, yeah, it definitely depends on how advanced it is. And a high-resolution MRI would be very helpful at determining what might be the next best step for you, because they could do a meniscal transplant with some cartilage procedure to graft in some cartilage that may repair the area of the knee that is damaged.
Yeah, and would a second repair surgery have any chance? Or
I do not think so.
Right, and the consequences of the meniscectomy?
Earlier development of arthritis, but right now the meniscus is non-functional, so whether you have a meniscectomy or not, the likelihood of developing arthritis is going to happen either way.
Nick, I got five calls behind you. I appreciate your call very much, but I want to move on if it's okay.
No, I thank you. I appreciate you taking time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Bob in Del Mar. Okay, Bob in Del Mar, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I've had bilateral full knee replacement 19 and 16 months ago. I rarely have any discomfort. I was at the beach and was walking in the surf last week, and afterwards my calves were very tight. My knees felt different, but in a good way. Mm-hmm. What exercises would you recommend to strengthen the calf?
Right. So the ankle pump exercises that you learned in the hospital, typically, the physical therapist, that's one of the first exercises they teach you. And there are exercises that you can do by just getting up on your toes. If you're standing by a counter, you can do those exercises where you just use your ankles to elevate you instead of bending your knees. That could really develop your calves nicely.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Good day.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We're coming down to the end of the show. So let's go to Barbara in Latham. All right, Barbara, you're on.
Oh, okay. I am 84 years old and definitely need a knee replacement. But I've had heart surgery and have a couple of false valves, and I'm taking blood thinner. Now, what do I do so that I can have this done? Because it really... I would hope it can be done anyway.
So there is very rarely a patient that I cannot help with knee replacement surgery. And I have taken care of patients with heart valves before in the past that have been on blood thinners.
Oh,
it is
great.
Really the direction of the cardiologist, and the cardiologist who takes care of your blood thinners helps us perform that surgery safely.
See him tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's
matter
convenient.
Of fact.
So there are blood thinners that are short-acting that you can take up until the day of surgery. You stop it the night before, and then we perform the surgery and then start the blood thinners again afterwards.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
That sounds good. And you don't think I'm too old for this?
No,
84.
Not at all.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay.
My bye-bye. Oldest knee replacement lady is 94.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
1-800-348-2551. We can get one or two more in. Let's go to Megan in Slingerlands. Megan, you're on.
Hi. I am 69 years old. I tore a meniscus 2 years ago in my left knee. My orthopedic surgeon did an MRI like 20 months ago. He said he could repair a torn meniscus. I had a lot of other things going on, including major dental surgery, so I put it off. But in January, I went to see him again, and last September. And I asked which meniscus it was, and he said he couldn't tell until he got in there. The good news is I've been walking 8 miles a week and swimming for an hour three times a day. And I've been getting down on my knees and gardening in the adult community where I live. And I'm not having any problems. I've also been religiously doing the exercises that he told me to do right up until the time of surgery. And do I need to get it done? I have a mild amount of arthritis, very mild, in that knee.
So the question is should you have the meniscus surgery done if you have no pain? And my opinion would be no. You know, the pain is the determining factor of performing any type of treatment. And if you're not having pain, then what would be our goal in performing the surgery or any other treatment in that matter? So I would not recommend having a surgery if you're not having any pain or instability in your knee.
No, I'm really not. And that kind of surprised me. Because I trust my orthopedic surgeon. You know, he saw me through a terribly bad ankle that was mangled after a fall and needed to be reconstructed. I spent a month in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. I had physical therapy at home for 4 weeks.
Okay, Megan, only because we're trying to get everybody in, I thank you for your call. Very helpful, and you asked a good question, and you got a good answer. Thanks again, Megan.
I was napping. What's the name of your guest today, Alan?
Yes. Our guest today, and a wonderful guest he is Dr. Frank Lombardo, board-certified orthopedist, practices at Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Northern Dutchess Hospital in Poughkeepsie, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thanks so much.
All right. Let's go to Yvonne in Kingston. Yvonne, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for hearing.
Hello. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I have a neuropathy in my foot, and I've got pretty significant atrophy in my left leg that I've noticed is now beginning in my pelvic girdle. I'm very physically fit. I've worked in the fitness profession for most of my adult life, and it's really interfering. From time to time, I fall now when I run.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen several specialists about it. I've seen some orthopedic surgeons about it. I've gone and seen neurological surgeons about it, and I've had numerous tests after tests, and no one has been able to give me any indication of what might be wrong, and now they've referred me to a rheumatologist.
Okay, now, Bob, Yvonne, we have less than a minute to go here,
yeah.
And so I'm going to send it to Dr. Lombardo. Go ahead, Doc.
So the question that you're asking is how can we help? It's very hard to propose a solution without knowing the diagnosis, and I think that's where your treatment is going to start. You really have to find a diagnosis or determine what the neuropathy is a result of to determine the best next step in action or treatment. Yeah.
Okay.
That's hard for me to do on
the phone. Thanks, Yvonne. Appreciate it a lot. Thanks. Let's go to Barbara. You got to ask the question in 1 second. Go ahead. You got a second. Barbara.
Oh, yes.
It's got to
be fast.
What
is the advantage or the disadvantage of an anterior or a posterior incision for hip replacement?
So anterior hip replacement surgery is somewhat new. It's been more popularized in the last several years. It provides an advantage of decreased dislocation rate and faster immobilization. It is not commonly performed. It's a more difficult surgery to do. The blood loss can be a little higher and the risks are a little bit higher, but there are advantages with earlier mobility and less dislocation.
Are you talking about the anterior?
Yes,
is that
Barbara,
correct?
I am so sorry. We are literally out of time here.
Okay.
Frank,
thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Bye.
So, I'm so sorry that we had to cut Barbara off. And I do want to thank everybody who called. It was a terrific show. Franklin Butter was great. We're out of time. I'd like to thank our doctor for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprosin, natural creams designed to address the epidemic of addiction to pain medicine by providing pain relief for the 21st century. Toprosin.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, Esquire. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.